Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello, and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, today we're going to cover just a tiny four films. I saw three, you saw two. It feels like a lighter than normal load.
It is. It's one of those weeks where we missed a couple of big ones that doesn't really matter, that the crowds that are going to see them are going to see them. And
what did we miss?
Oh, well, you didn't miss Sicario. I missed Sicario sequel.
Yeah, because, it's like I'm about to talk about Sicario.
But Uncle Drew. We both took a pass on Uncle Drew. But that was because we had a bunch of other movies that we saw this week that we'll actually talk about next week, like Ant-Man and the Whitney Houston documentary. So there were so many other things to see that that it kind of forced me to scale back on some of the other stuff this week.
All right. I got the wine today. Even though it's really hot outside, we went red.
You went red.
And I believe we've actually had this before.
Insurrection. It does have a title, a label that I would think we would see. Freedom is Fearless is the little subheading. So I don't know. Insurrection. I'm assuming maybe it has something to do with the movie I did not see, Sicario.
I knew you would bite off on that thinking it's Sicario because it looks militaristic and violent. And it's not. It is not for Sicario. It's for Damsel. It's about female empowerment.
That was the other one I missed.
Breaking gender stereotypes.
Oh, okay. So I did miss Damsel as well, which is why I missed out on what the wine was supposed to represent.
Did you see the first Sicario in 2015.
I did not.
So, but you know the director from the first director of the first Sicario 2015, Denis Villeneuve. And we know him from that. We know him from Arrival, from which he was Oscar nominated for. And the reason he did not do Sicario 2 or Day of the Soldado is because he was busy doing Blade Runner 2049. Wise move on your part, Denis. Very, very wise move. But it's also written by Taylor Sheridan. Now, we have sung Taylor Sheridan's praises on this podcast numerous times because his first script, Sicario, it didn't blow me away. I was left actually kind of cold to that film. But then he delivered Hell or High Water. And he delivered and directed Wind River.
Two
films we have just glorified to the heavens on this podcast. So he wrote Sicario, Day of the Soldado, which the literal translation is Hitman, Day of the Soldier. And Emily Blunt is gone. The first movie was actually told through her point of view. And now we're left with Josh Brolin. It's kind of the summer of Josh Brolin.
My goodness, he's just everywhere.
Deadpool 2 and Avengers Infinity War and now Sicario 2. And Benicio del Toro. They're both back. The U.S.-Mexican border. So same location. The cartels are branching out just from drugs and human trafficking. They're now trafficking over Islamic extremists. Suicide bombers that are blowing themselves up in Kansas City, the heartland. So the Secretary of Defense, Matthew Modine, in fact, tasks Uber CIA soldier agent Matt, played by Josh Brolin, start a war. Go down to Mexico and start a war between all the cartels and the Mexican government and just turn it into a mess so no one is focusing on sending Islamists over the border. He enlists his old trusted ally, Benicio del Toro, Alejandro is his name, ruthless assassin, and he's just motivated and fueled by vengeance because in the first movie, you know, the cartel murdered his family, his wife and his daughter, so all he does now is kill bad guys, and a whole bunch of them. Their idea is actually starts out okay, you know, they kill one guy and they claim to be the other cartel, blah, 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 blah. And then they kidnap the daughter of Mexico's number one capo, number one cartel leader. They kidnap his daughter, and they're going to transport her over to another cartel's territory. And it actually becomes super complicated, overly complex. And I'm pretty good at following plot. I'm excellent at following plot. And I was having a tough time. This is needlessly complicated, and it becomes extremely violent. You know what you're getting. I mean, it's in your face.
Which is why I skipped it.
Violent. And I'm okay with that.
I'm not, so.
And so the first half of this movie, I was all in. It's like, oh, man, this is an action thriller. People are getting shot in the face. This is great. I'm loving this movie. And then the second half happened. And it's lazy. It's based on the dumbest, most unlikely coincidence happens, and everything happens off of that. And then things happen to a human body, yet he continues to move on. And Taylor Sheridan laid an egg. I don't know if he was distracted writing for other stuff. I know he has other projects and just wanted to knock a sequel out because the first Sicario made so much money. The second, and I'm not alone in this. Everyone thinks the second half, especially the last half hour of this film, like, fell apart. And it's a new director because Denis left. It's a man named Stefano Salama. He is an Italian TV director. And it's not his fault. Filmmaking is not the problem. Someone already made a Sicario, so we know what it looks like. We know what it sounds like. So all he had to do was paint by numbers. We have a different director of photography. The first one was Roger Deakins. Uber Roger Deakins, but he went and did Blade Runner 2049 and won an Oscar for it. So we have a new DP, and it's not his fault either, because he already knew how to shoot it. We've already seen this car. It's Taylor's fault, because just what could have been excellence, what could have been greatness, implodes. And there are the themes here. There are themes here to be explored. Human trafficking, the next generation of foot soldiers, coyotes, vengeance, and what a bummer.
Yeah, I heard that from several people who said that it just completely falls apart in the second half. There's sort of a tale of two films. And I do not like heavy violence in movies unless I've heard from others that it's a must-see for other reasons. And so I had just absolutely no interest in going to see this one. I've always meant to catch up on the first Sicario. I did not see it mostly for the exact same reasons that Artie Chick had reviewed it for chickflix.net, so I didn't feel like I had to see it. And it was just not the kind of film that that I typically would enjoy. And so you double up on all of that, and you have the sequel that I still had no interest in seeing. And it sounds like I made the right call on that one.
I guess you can call it a franchise now, the Sicario franchise. It reminds me of Traffic. Remember Steven Soderbergh's multiple Oscar nominee from 2000? It's multifaceted. The drug, the border situation from different angles, from all sides. And it even stars Benicio del Toro. You're not supposed to laugh at a movie like this. It's serious business. And something happens at the end, and the audience chuckled. The audience laughed, and that just annihilates any atmosphere, any tone the director was going for, and what a shame.
All right, I'll take your word for that one.
All right, the one I skipped, I had the opportunity to see it. I just
You were decided, lazy.
No, I was Taylor Sheridan lazy, and I just didn't feel like watching. I judged the movie poster.
You did. You misjudged.
The best movie poster of the year, by the way, is Sicario, Day of the Soldado. That's a gorgeous movie poster. So I looked at the Boundaries movie poster, and I said, move along, and it's going to start a theme, I think, of you, because it has a female director, and it's somewhat autobiographical.
Well, we had, there were two movies, so the ones that we'll talk about next, both were written and directed by women. And so with Boundaries, this is not a great movie, don't get me wrong. But it
has the lowest tomato score of anything this week.
It's kind of sad. It's Christopher Plummer and Vera Farmiga, who are both great. And even there's the kid in it who was the one who, the one who was in McDougal, who was in the Monster Calls, I think.
We just saw him.
Yeah, we just saw him in something else. But this was based on this relationship that the writer-director Shauna Fest had with her own father, who was one of these guys who had been in and out of jail her entire life, was a charmer, but he'd been in and out of jail for nonviolent offenses, and he had a bunch of wives. He was married like six times, had kids from a whole bunch of different women. And so she drew on her own personal story and her own personal abandonment issues with her father to tell this story. And it's ultimately, it's this father-daughter road trip movie is really what it is, kind of a dramedy. And so Vera Farmiga plays the daughter. Christopher Plummer is the aging father who's been kicked out of his retirement home or assisted living facility because he's been dealing pot, growing pot and dealing pot.
Nice.
In the in the assisted living home, and he basically had had a bunch of chances, and they were like, that's it, you're out. So they kick him out. He calls the daughter, who he really very rarely speaks to, or she very rarely answers the phone when he calls. But she, they kind of strike a bargain because she wants to be able to send her kid to a some sort of private school that's going to cost some money because he's having some major socialization problems in his own school, and he keeps drawing nude photos of all the people that that he comes into contact with, which doesn't go over so well. And so they all end up kind of piling into a car and driving from Seattle to Los Angeles, where the sister lives, and she's going to take Dad in for a while. And so this road trip ensues, but what the daughter doesn't know is that Dad has plotted out a route to Los Angeles that includes stops along the way with a whole bunch of interesting characters so that he can actually deal. He's a drug dealer on the road, and that's what's going to get the money to pay for the kid's school. And if this did not have Christopher Plummer and Vera Farmiga in it, it would be a total dud. But those two are just really strong to watch, and that's kind of what saves this film. And Christopher Plummer is just, he's kind of fun to watch in this. You just can tell that he's kind of savoring this role. And after we saw him in something like, you know, the quick insert in
All the Money in the World,
it was kind of nice to just see him in this role that he just that,
we saw him play
his.
The Kaiser Wilhelm last year.
Yeah, that was definitely. He's having this incredible post 80 resurgence. And,
the post-80 resurgence.
So, yes. You know, good for
him. How common that is.
Yeah, but you know, a bunch of people. So Lewis McDougall is the one who plays the son, Henry.
And I cannot remember what we just saw him in.
And we just saw him in something and mentioned how he was in, he'd also been
We mentioned the director, Jay Bayona, who just did Jurassic World. But Lewis McDougall is not in that film.
I wonder if we did see him in something, but we'll figure it out. But this is... you know, it's just kind of trying to be a Little Miss Sunshine type of vibe, only it's just not as poignant and not as strong.
Yeah, that's a tough comparison. That's an Oscar-nominated Best Picture
film. Yeah, so that's your standard bearer, and this one is trying to be that, but isn't.
Well, it's directed by a lady named Shayna Fest, I think is how you pronounce it, and this is her third feature film, and I did not see her first two. I had no desire to see Gwyneth Paltrow in something called Country Strong.
Oh, right.
And I really did not want to see the remake of Endless Love a couple years ago, and I don't think anybody saw that. But maybe some people will take some time to see Boundaries.
Well, and they'll see it. It could be a Movies for Grown-Ups, as we like to term them, because of Christopher Plummer. But the other animal lovers might actually really get something out of this. Because
more than eating animals?
Yes. The ones who actually like alive animals that remain alive, rescues. And so what part of Vera Farmiga's character is that she just cannot turn away a stray. And so she ends up just constantly gathering all these stray animals, and they're everywhere. It drives away any potential romantic relationship she might have, because literally these animals have the run of the house and the car. And so there are some really cute ones in there though. And if you go to the website for the film, the animals have their own bios.
Of course they do.
So there is that that element that, you know, no animals have been harmed in this film. In fact, a lot of rescues were used in the making of this movie. And so there is a little something for those who have a soft spot for rescuing animals.
I have no desire to catch up with this movie.
You don't have a soft spot for rescuing animals.
I'm fine with it. Well, we rescued a cat. We rescued Podcat.
Yes.
Who I would love to unrescue plenty of days.
Well, and this one does have, like, Christopher Lloyd and, who else shows up? There's a couple of interesting, Peter Fonda shows up in this. It's
been
like,
in the news lately.
Yeah, so, you know, they're the ones who the father kind of stops along the way to see, because they, and basically hands out some weed for them. And so it's definitely a movies for grown-ups kind of thing, just for catching up with some of those folks. But it's just, unfortunately, it's one where the cast is stronger than the film.
Well, you know, I also think our next film we're going to talk about is in movies for grown-ups, and not because, you know, it has old people in it, even though it has some borderline retired characters in it. I would call it a think piece. It's not complex, but it's psychologically challenging. And I saw somebody call it a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute.
No, I saw that too.
Psychological
drama.
All day. All day psychological.
Yeah.
Thriller.
No, it is a psychodrama and not a thriller. I know. I saw that too. And I was like, no, wrong designation there, because this is quiet.
We're talking about Nancy. Nancy was a Sundance surprise. Not only was it nominated for the Grand Jury Award, it won a screenwriting award, the Waldo Salt Screenwriting Award, which surprises me because there's not a lot of dialogue in here. And it's also directed by a first-time feature female director, Christina Cho. And she got one of the most, I guess you'd call it, versatile actresses working today. It's kind of like the actress you say, I know I've seen her somewhere, but where have I seen her? And I'm talking about Andrea Riseborough. I remember her from Birdman. I remember her from Oblivion. There were only like three people in Oblivion, so I really remember her from Oblivion. But, and I guess she was also in Battle of the Sexes last year, and she was in my favorite movie so far this year,
The Death of Stalin.
She played Svetlana Stalin. And she doesn't look like any of her characters.
That's true.
She's wearing this black wig. She's severely depressed. She's about 35 years old. She's a temp living in snowy New Jersey. And on the local news one day, there's a piece about a couple whose child, their five-year-old, 30 years ago, was stolen, was kidnapped from the mall. And they, you know, they have this scholarship fund, this college fund, and they're like, yeah, maybe our daughter's still out there. And Nancy decides, you know what? I never liked my mom. My mom never liked me. Maybe I am this long-lost girl.
Well, and she saw a resemblance. They did one of those, they showed those age progression photos. And so she did pick up on some resemblance there. And so that's kind of what triggered the whole, maybe this would answer why I just never felt like I fit before.
And she doesn't fit. Honestly, the best way to describe Nancy is she's a strange woman. Yeah. She's just a strange woman. And I think the underlying subtext here is when lies become truth, when you lie to yourself so often and so persistently that, you know what, maybe it's actually true. And you know what, maybe she is the long-lost daughter of Steve Buscemi and J. Smith Cameron in upstate New York. She goes to visit, she calls him on the phone. It's like, you know what, mom, dad, I could be your daughter. And they say, all right, come on up, let's find out. And this is where the psychological part comes in. Mom, of course, wants this to be her daughter. Please be my daughter. Let us bond. Let us catch up on 30 years of absence. And Steve Buscemi is,
well, all right,
you can
he's
come
careful.
In, but I'm going to take a second look at you.
Yeah.
I liked Nancy. I actually got a kick out of it. But I find this a very challenging film, and I'm interested. A lot of people, I think, might find it slow.
Well, ironically, I did not find it as slow as a lot that I often give that designation to. She's a lonely soul, and you sort of just go along with this. It reminded me at the beginning a little bit of Where is Kira? Because that one with
Michelle Pfeiffer and
Kiefer Sutherland began sort of the same way, where you had this woman who was taking care of her mother who was dying. And then the mother dies, and then that's where, you know, the story kind of takes off after that. And so this movie makes that film, which I thought was pretty quiet, sound like a symphony. I mean, just unbelievable how quiet how quiet Nancy really is.
That's a good way to put that. You know, Where is Kira was, well, many people thought that was slow, but
yeah.
it was blaring horns loud compared to this.
Well, and this one I think was only around 87 minutes. It was smart.
It
didn't
short.
Go any longer than it could or than it needed to. And you end up sympathizing with all of them to some degree. It's like you realize that she is flawed, and she takes on, she becomes basically takes on different roles and is an imposter and presents herself differently to different people through the internet. She's looking for connection and love, and John Leguizamo shows up for like a minute.
He's in an odd cameo.
Yeah, it was. It's, you know, he got pretty high billing, and then he shows up, and then he's kind of gone. So I don't know if he was maybe friends with the filmmaker, but this one was an all-female team of producers, production crew, financiers. So it is getting a lot of buzz for just sort of taking on that all-female driven filmmaking. And I liked it. It just, it was shot well, and I was surprised. It's one of those ones that does leave the end rather open to interpretation.
Well, no, I don't think so. It doesn't wrap it up with a bow.
But it wraps it up. Yeah.
We get answers.
You do. And this is another one where written and directed, I hope I get her name spelled pronounced right, by Christina Cho, maybe, C-H-O-E. This is her feature debut, and I think that she also drew on her own past for this one, where I read that she'd been duped by like a favorite college professor who it turns out was an imposter. And so she was able to kind of captivated by what drives people to just kind of be so fake and to take on these fake personas and fool people this way. And which can result in people really just getting very hurt or upset. But she also kind of balances this fine line with, well, even if they did make some part of their history and their lives up, if they were able to fill an emotional void for each other, is it so wrong? And that's where it becomes really just kind of interesting. And that's where this film lies, I think, is somewhere just in that space between, you know, is this so terrible all the way around, or is it acceptable in some way?
Well, yeah, it's borderline. It's certainly borderline. She's making some interesting choices. You mentioned Anne Dowd to me the other day that, oh, Anne Dowd's in this, and she's been in it everything lately. And then I looked it up, and it's like, I have seen her a lot. She was in A Kid Like Jake. She was in American Animals, and she was in one we didn't see, but is actually taking off right now, another A24 film, Hereditary. Mm-hmm. So Anne Dowd plays Nancy's mom. Yeah, she is and everything. And all in all, I was pleasantly surprised by this film. I went in not expecting too much, and I got more out of it than I expected to.
Yeah, the press notes quoted Albert Camus, and it says, "Fiction is the lie through which we tell the truth." And I think that applies very well to both Nancy and to Boundaries. And I like that it's a bit of a twisted psychological drama, but in the end, it makes its point in a very quiet way. And so I was surprised in a pleasant way.
Well, we're going to end tonight on the one I saw that you didn't see. It's called Damsel. And it's my colon dot dot subline is How the West Was Absurd. Damsel is directed by the Zellner brothers, David and Nathan Zellner. They're co-directors, and they both star in the film, one in a very, very big main role. And, of course, it reminded me, not just because of the brothers part, it reminded me of the Coen brothers. Like, if they made a quirky, absurd Western. And they made a Western. It's called No Country for Old Men. Won a Best Picture Oscar.
I know, which I did not love. Sorry.
But I've seen the Zellner brothers before. I don't know if you've seen Kumiko the Treasure Hunter.
Missed that one.
It was an award screener a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. It's about a Japanese girl who goes to Fargo, North Dakota to find the buried treasure from Fargo the movie. Based on a true story.
Of course.
And so they have a Sundance kind of track record. And this was a Sundance film, and it has a striking cast. A cast you didn't think the Zellner brothers could pull. They pulled Robert Pattinson, Mr. Team Edward himself. They pulled Mia Wasikowska, Miss Alice in Wonderland, Trax, they got a powerhouse cast. And it's absurd. Robert Pattinson is Samuel Alabasta. Sammy Alabasta is traveling from the east, and he is coming to aid his betrothed, his fiancée, who has been kidnapped by bandits.
Oh, no.
And so he lands in the, he actually lands on the, from the ocean. He rows ashore, opens up a crate, and out pops a miniature horse named Butterscotch, because, of course, that's what you would take to rescue the damsel.
Of course.
He picks up a parson in town, because immediately after he rescues the girl, he wants to get hitched. So it's like, not only can you help me save her, Mr. You've Never Held a Firearm Before, you're also going to be there to, right after I pop the question, after I untie her from her ropes.
Mm-hmm.
So the first half of the film is just them getting together and then going to save Mia Wasikowska, the damsel, Penelope. They're going to save Penelope. And they get there and something happens. Robert Pattinson, Sammy Alabasta, becomes sort of somewhat of an unreliable protagonist. And something happens. And themes start to pop out like, man, it must have been challenging for women back then. Maybe they didn't want to be saved as often as they got saved. Maybe they had ideas of their own about their future and their lives or who they chose or chose not to marry. White knight syndrome pops in my head. I've heard that term before. Every man thinks, you know, I'm better for you than him, because in my head I am, no matter what you may think. And I'm going to save you because I think you need saving. And that's the road we go. That's the twist that happens. And that's the normal part. Things just cascade into absurdity from there. And usually, this would be my film all over the place. I love quirk.
Yes.
I love oddness.
Yes.
I love awkward.
Yes.
I love all of this. And it's not very good.
That's sad.
It's not.
Because the more you talked about it and the more you used those adjectives, I was like, if it's more absurd and more quirky than Coen Brothers, and I am borderline with Coen Brothers as is. And so anything that kind of goes that far, even beyond what Coen Brothers do in terms of absurd, pretty much makes it clear that I would not necessarily see it. And I thought about it briefly, about trying to squeeze this one in, but it was really going to be difficult. And then I saw Robert Pattinson, I think it was on The Tonight Show, and they showed a little clip, and even when they came back, the audience just was kind of like, I don't know about this one. And I still haven't, I did finally watch Good Time. He was very good in Good Time.
You watched Good Time?
I did watch
Good
Time.
One of my top 10 films of last year?
I still didn't love it, but I kind of understood. I thought he was very good in it.
He was my best actor last year.
Yeah, so that was a very gritty film, and this one just looks a little too...
It's weird. It's experimental.
Another experimental.
And I'm glad it's almost like the hashtag Me Too of the 1870s Pacific Northwest, if you will, if you want to get specific about
it.
But because people keep trying to save Penelope. And she's like, just let me be. I don't want all of, multiple people try to save Penelope. And she ends up just throwing rocks at people. Like, stop it.
Good for her.
That should feel fresh. That should feel original. Like, you don't see women on the homestead taking care of themselves like that, being fiercely independent. And unfortunately, it's too out there.
Yeah.
Rein it in a little bit and you would have had something. I'm in the minority though. It's a fresh tomato.
Uh-oh.
People really like Damsel, but I think it's more critics like it than...
And we've seen a lot of that
and
lately.
Joe the Plumber.
And so I'm a little more skeptical about some of the ones that the critics are telling us we have to like. I'm really going to be curious because I've seen a lot of that about one of the ones, Sorry to Bother You, I think that we're going to see
next week.
We're
seeing that on Tuesday,
yeah. And so I've seen some indications that I'm supposed to like it even if I don't.
Well, I think we... as, I don't know, amateur critics that we are, would like Nancy more than the general public would.
Yeah.
And this is just another example that, this has, you know, like cult classic kind of potential. Not like The Room, but that's just odd. Not like Lebowski either, because that's just on another level. But it's just so odd. There's nothing like this film out there. Nothing.
Well, but when you talk about experimental, I'm still recovering from the one
the
last
Misandris.
Week, from the Misandris.
That's experimental. So
that's
straight up traditional.
Exactly.
To that.
So I can't even imagine anything being nearly as experimental as that one
That's
was.
Hard. That is hardcore experimentation.
Yes. And my gut tells me that Damsel will not sustain.
You would have appreciated Penelope, Mia Wasikowska. You'd be like, you know what? That what an interesting character for that time and place.
I believe that. I'm generally not.
If anything, I would love for you to watch just the second half of that film.
The second half?
Because she's not in the first half.
Well, so maybe, you know, it's like you watch the first half of Sicario sequel and the second half of Damsel, and you actually have
you might
one
have
really
something,
good
then.
film-going experience.
Plus, the tone would shift.
Yeah. You think?
All right. Well, a quicker week than normal. Four films and no documentaries. We usually have a documentary or three to talk about.
We,
and no documentaries.
We hit our quota already.
But they'll be back next week because you've already seen
exactly.
Whitney.
Exactly. Next week we've got at least two because I've seen Whitney and there's Three Identical Strangers, which also looks very intriguing.
And to plug next week, the final, even though it's only almost July 1st, late June, the final Marvel film of the entire year. We've already had a million, Black Panther, Avengers, Deadpool, kind of, that's halfsie, and now Ant-Man and the Wasp, the one I was least excited to see. But we've already seen it, and we can already talk about it, but I'm not going to tell you what I thought about it yet.
Yeah, except that if you have a July 4th movie and we haven't heard our podcast yet, you can go.
So we started the day with Sicario, Day of Soldado. The first half is amazing, but it just takes a nosedive into oblivion.
And I will say that I will see the second one after I see the first one, which could very well be never.
You know, you saw Good Time, which blows my mind.
I know.
You saw Boundaries.
I saw Boundaries, which, again, just for Christopher Plummer and Vera Farmiga, you know, just to see them. They're strong. The story, not so much. Just a weak version of your typical road trip dramedy.
Nancy is a strange woman, and she's got layers that I wouldn't want to know her in real life, but I'm glad to see her on screen for 87 minutes. Thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I actually do give it a thumbs up. 87 minutes was just right. It ended, and it made you think a little bit about, wow, that was quite intriguing. So a quiet movie with an interesting through line, and definitely if you're into a nice psychological drama, this is a good one to pick.
Damsel's a good reminder that even though you might be in love with the woman, maybe you're not the savior. Just think it through the next time you go save the woman from herself. It could have been great.
I would say watch the trailer, and if you can get through 30 seconds of Robert Pattinson with whatever accent he was speaking in.
Samuel Alabaster.
Then you might want to see it. But
and for Butterscotch, the miniature horse.
Oh, yeah. So, but if you have to pick between Butterscotch, the miniature horse, and Damsel, and all the cute rescues that pop up in Boundaries.
That's
and so
cute.
I suspect
it's a cute miniature horse.
I suspect that the menagerie in Boundaries could win that race, too.
Samuel Alabaster calls him a living conversation piece.
I believe that.
All right. Thank you very much for taking the time to listen to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Anna Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.